That's it. You have another one? Swan. Hi. Good. Okay. Yeah. By the way, there's a handout. If you don't have, you have at the table. En français, you see en anglais. So the sequence of end time prophecies. You know, so prophecies may be a little difficult sometimes to put together, but the sequence is quite clear, at least until you get to number 5 in the handout. So what you have, the first one, let's go very briefly over it and stop at number 10. This is where we are. The first thing to happen, the next prophecy to happen is the rapture. We have that studied this. So the rapture is because of the imminency of the coming of the Lord. And that was for the last 2,000 years. That is the, all believers, Paul, of course, Peter and so on, expected the Lord to come in their own time. And so these 2,000 years that happened so far is to show us the grace of God and the patience of God. The second thing is the Bema Seat of Christ. This is where we're going to be judged for the things we have done in this body. So it's not too late. Whatever you've done, you haven't done, you can start doing. It's not only what we have done, but what we haven't done. Right? So the Lord will say, how come you didn't do anything with the talents that I gave you? Remember the parable of the talents? Okay, it's normal. He gave you something, we ought to use it. Number 3, what would start the last 7 years of the, you know, of the prophecy of Daniel. Daniel chapter 9, verses 23 to 27 or 24 to 27, is the signing of the 7-year peace covenant. Okay. And today we can feel that this peace covenant is coming because Israel is in dire need of this peace covenant, because we see that the whole world is starting to turn against Israel. We see this in the news and so on and so forth. So anyone who would come, that is anyone that would be this time the Antichrist, who would guarantee Israel, that is, peace or protection for a period of 7 years. It'll be so strong that Gog and Magog, if you read the prophecy, it's going to be like they're going to open up their borders. Open up their borders. Listen, we don't know if this is going to happen now. If it does happen now, I think it's going to be a second Palestinian state where the borders are going to be open and so on. It fits the prophecy, but we don't know. But we know that a peace covenant will start the 7 years. If you happen to be on earth at this point, accept the Lord Jesus Christ as your personal Savior, because you missed the first boat. There's another one coming, so to speak, like, you know. But all believers will be taken, because the time of the rapture is a time of judgment, right? Remember, the concept of the rapture is in the Old Testament. Remember, where do you find it? A lot, yes. The angel, before they destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah, they said, we cannot do anything unless you get out of here, because judgment was coming. And Noah, of course, he was taken above the waters. After that, number 4, you have the construction of the third temple, which might sound very crazy for you guys, for most people, that is. But in Israel, it's not. It's an actual thing that will happen soon. The 5th thing is the day of the Lord. Of course, that's really the beginning. It's like number 3. This is when the day of the Lord begins. The day of the Lord has a 7-year tribulation, and actually it goes even further, like Peter brings it also, to the millennium, because the millennium is not complete peace. There will be peace, but there will be also evil. There will be sacrifices, right? So you have 1,000 years, 7 years, 1,000 years, and then you have the eternal state. This is only going to be completely, that is, no sin, yeah. Because the millennium is also, again, there's sin, because there are sacrifices. Of course, the lion will eat with the lamb, the wolf, that is, will eat with the lamb, and so on. But there still be sin in there, okay?
So it's 7 years, 1,000?
7 years, 1,000, and then eternal state. Okay. It's only after the millennium that Satan is bound. He's bound forever, right? Those who believe that we're in the millennium think that Satan is bound, by the way, because he's going to be bound for 1,000 years, let go for a bit, and then come back for a short period of time, and then we're going to have the eternal state. Yeah. I think so. Yes.
No, it's
written. Oh, it is written. So there you go.
But it doesn't say when he's released after 1,000 years.
After 1,000 years, yeah, it says in Revelation, a very short time. It says this is another war called Gog and Magog, but there won't be any war because the Lord is going to stop it right away. So it's going to be a very short time, but it's going to accumulate for 1,000 years some kind of rebellion, hatred, but that's different. That's during that millennium, yeah.
I have a question. Why is there so many people who are mixed up about if Christ is coming about the tribulation, that, you know, it's post-tribulation?
Or mid or post. Yes, because the actual wrath of God itself is, and we're going to see this today, starts in the middle of the tribulation. That's why you have the numbers of days, 1260 days, 42 months. It starts exactly there. If you go deeper, their argument falls at some point in time. They do fall because Jesus says will be taken away from this time. In fact, in Revelation, as soon as the first seal is open in Revelation chapter 6, right, the church is up there. You have the 24 elders, okay, which represent the church. That is as soon as the 7 year begin. And who are the 24 elders? They're sitting on the throne. No one in heaven is sitting on throne. Only God and us, because he says, you'll be sitting with me on my throne. You understand? So you have this throne. And that in itself, that's enough, you know, to show that the church has to be taken away. 24, why? Because this is according to the 24 courses of the priesthood. You know, but that's another story. Okay. So it's, yeah. Yeah. Of the dispensation of grace at the rapture. Whatever happens is not grace anymore. It's as if you go back to the first century. Okay? Because the time of the church, like Paul said in Ephesians chapter 3, is actually a mystery. It wasn't a mystery, that means the Old Testament prophets did not know about it. So if you look in the prophecies of the Old Testament, they did not know about the time of the church. And it's not supposed to be 2,000 years. It was supposed to be much shorter than that. But God, being so nice and graceful, he extends it as far as he can. Right. It's always by grace. It's... Paul, do you have grace? With Adam and Eve, grace is always there. Without grace, the whole history would have stopped. At some point in time, obviously. Yeah.
First
of all, who they are, we have to guess, because sometimes the Bible doesn't tell you everything, right? First of all, they're sitting on thrones. Thrones is we have to figure out who they are, because in Daniel, there's a passage in Daniel chapter 7 where they put up thrones, and the rabbis couldn't figure out up to today who they are, these thrones for who, because there's only one God who sits on the throne. And so, but we understand from Revelation 24 that this has to be the church, because we're the only one who have promised that we'll be sitting on thrones.
Question.
Yeah.
Are the 12 disciples? No. They're 11.
Okay. And they added one after.
Plus the 12 tribes.
Yeah, the 12 tribes.
Are they representative?
No. No. The reason why it's 24 is because when David wanted to divide the Levites into different courses or in different parties, he made it 24 of them, just like it is in heaven. God told them, you do it like the sample I give you in heaven. So he divided all the number of Levites in 24 courses, meaning that each of the Levites could go to the temple for about a week or two and work there during their lifetime. Okay, minimum. So the number 24 is known. It is in Second Chronicles chapter 24, in fact. And then this is why we understand that the 24 elders are those representing the church itself. So by these two deductions, we understand that these are who they are. Okay, so you have the 24, that is the priesthood and the thrones. But the throne is a very strong argument. Okay, now let's go further. So you have number 6, okay, the rise of the Antichrist. The Antichrist will rise. He's spoken of so many times into the scriptures. And today the world is looking for a leader. There's no leaders right now in the world, not even the Americans. Usually it's the President of the United States who is some kind of a leader in the world, so they don't have that. That doesn't mean that the next leader will be the Antichrist, but who knows? I'm kidding. We don't know who is, right? Now, number 7, the rise of the last false Jewish prophet. Don't forget that in Revelation 13, you have the Antichrist, verses 1. And verses 13, you have the false prophet. This one is Jewish. He comes out of the land. The Antichrist comes out of the sea. So the sea is the symbol of the nations. And so he would be the false Jewish Messiah, because the Jews are waiting for that Messiah who would build the temple, in fact. This is where and he will bring fire from heaven. Do you remember? This is what he does in Revelation chapter 13. He brings fire from heaven so we can connect it with perhaps the thing that is the sacrifice of the first animal, right? Then you have the sealing of the 144,000. Okay, but it's not necessarily in sequence here. It could be happen at the same time, because the sealing of the 144,000, I believe, happened right after the rapture, because the Lord cannot leave the earth without a witness. So these would be 144,000 Jews, 12,000 from each tribe, who would start going out and do their work, because their work, that was the original work according to Exodus 19:6. You shall be a nation of priests, right? Yeah, they would be here, and they would be sealed. Sealed meaning that the Antichrist cannot touch them. Yes, I believe that 1,000 will come from Montreal. Again, like we said, because if you divide the number of the 144,000 by the different cities and the number of Jews per city, we have 1,000 in Montreal. So go ahead and give Yerevan. This is why, you know, it's incredible that today they accept, Jews accept the New Testament. This is never seen before. You know, this is how we know these are little things. We know that we're coming closer. Then you have the two witnesses, Revelation 11. The two witnesses, okay, I believe they would be at the Temple Mount. These two, who they are, we don't know, but they'll be in the spirit of Moses and Elijah. Right? And so they would be preaching the word. Who they are, we don't know. Maybe two people who would come out from there. Some believers think that there would be two from this dispensation going into the other, and so on. But this we don't know. But there would be two witnesses. And they're going to die and resurrect. And they're going to die, it tells us, we saw this last time. The world makes a big party because they're going to disturb the world greatly. They're going to be so effective. Imagine two guys doing like this type of work. Okay, so they must be in the world today. Where are they? We don't know.
They'll resurrect
3 days after. And said the whole world will see. And this is when the end will start, like really the very end. And now we are in the start of the Great Tribulation. We're in number 10. Yeah. Sure. No, they're not going to die. The 144,000 do not die because they're going to be sealed. They will enter the millennium. It's possible that they're going to be like, they're going to have, I don't know, they will be highly ranked there. You know, they're going to be governing with Jesus. Let's not forget that we're going to be in the New Jerusalem, right? Because at the rapture, we're going to have a new body, a heavenly body, right? And so, what is our role in the millennium? It's not too clear. We're going to rule with Christ, but our home will be in heaven. Okay, how's the heavenly body? We don't know. Maybe like Jesus, he went through the doors, and maybe you can eat as much as you want. You won't get fat. This is great. You can have a feast for a few days, you know. Okay, let's go now to the actual, the start of the, that is the Great Tribulation. That is the middle of the tribulation. Because from that point on, until the end, it's really like hell on earth, really. I mean, you heard this expression. This is where we're going to learn that all the demons are going to be confined on earth. Okay, now they're not. And yet we're having a lot of trouble. Just imagine how people, good hatred is going to rule during this time. And here, this is where we're going to find out the length of days. Like I said, 260 days, 42 months, 3.5 years. It's all the same and it's repeated in order for the people then to know that it won't go beyond it. And for this, we can go to Revelation chapter 12. Yeah.
Men.
Like it's first of all against Christians. Christians are not going to be there. It's going to be against believers, whoever would be the new believers. It's going to be primarily against Israel, and we're going to see why. So Israel will be first, tribulation and anguish to Israel first, like it says in Romans 2:9, right? And then the Gentiles. But it's going to be a worldwide hatred, because of the hatred of each other, because Satan's going to be here. It's going to be no peace at all. Think of the worst thing. I mean, I don't know, like, let's say you remove the police force. People just go and take everything they want and so on. So it's going to be wars between the nations. All this is explained in the seals and the trumpets and the bowls. I mean, you read this, we went through the actual book of Revelation, and it's kind of disturbing to read all these things. I believe it is written for those who will be there, because it's very detailed. They will understand things that we cannot at this point, but we know it's there. Okay, so that's the book of Revelation itself. So it's war. Just imagine being right now in Gaza, let's say. Okay, so it's war. It's absolute war against people. There's no food. There's hatred. You don't know where to hide. It's going to be kind of worldwide. Perhaps some areas will be better than others. That's right. That's right. Well, this is it. Anyway, this will start in 7 years, but the worst will be the 3.5 years. And the 3.5 years, this is where we're going now. And this is where the Revelation chapter 12 will give us a synopsis of the history of Israel with Jesus. What happened from the beginning till the end. And this is where God says there's going to be so much anti-Semitism that he himself will hide Israel. Okay, would have personally come and put Israel away, because the devil would want to annihilate all of Israel. Why? Because Jesus said, I will not come back until they say, blessed be he who comes in the name of the Lord. And so this is why anti-Semitism would be at its highest. And this is for Israel, but it's going to be for the whole world as well. Armageddon, it's all the nations together. And where would it happen? It would happen in Israel, because God said, this is where I'm coming back. This is when I'm going to build my, my kingdom. So, to define what worship is. Okay, he's going to be a political leader. Yes, that's right. They would have to take the mark. If they don't take the mark, just like you don't have a credit card today, you can't buy that many things. If you have to go on Amazon, you need a credit card, and so on. So there's less and less cash. And we see it going towards it. And so, and even today, they already have a number that is put into the forehead or in the hand. Okay, and it's practically better, so to speak, because cards, they lose a lot of money. But if you have it in your hand, you just click it and it works, apparently. It's in Sweden, they have it, and they have it in different parts. Yeah. National. This is when Israel as a nation will recognize the Messiah. Not individuals, because individuals, you've got to have it all the time. This is when the leaders of Israel will say, now we know who you are. This is what, and Jesus then will come back. And this is why we should go and, preach the word as much as we can and so on. And it's good. It's good. Today I got a phone call, in fact, of a pastor, Italian pastor in the East End, and they're inviting actually the consulate or the ambassador of Israel to speak there in his church. So he asked me to come and to open up with a few words and a prayer. And I said, no. I said, I don't think he's going to be happy that I'm there. Absolutely not. I said, and he could understand. I said, yes, because they would accept other Christians who do not preach the word to the Jews. Okay, we're known. In fact, our website in Israel was cut off for a few weeks, I remember. In fact, in 3 days, I remember, and on and off. You know, somebody told us that. So we're known. So he wouldn't like our presence, but I told them that he will be blessed. And he was very touched. And anyway, I'm going to meet him and so on and so forth. So we cannot mix the two because we don't have the red carpet in Israel, as you know. All right, so let's go and Revelation chapter 12. Okay, so what we have here, this brings us right to the heart of the end time prophecies by revealing first the main players. So the first player, of course, is Israel. We're going to see. Second player that is not often mentioned is the devil. In fact, he's going to be mentioned very clearly. You have Israel, the devil. A third player we're going to see is the angel Michael. We know the angel Michael, the archangel Michael, according to Daniel, is actually the angel that takes care of Israel. Again, he must be the busiest angel in heaven. Okay, I would say, did you know that he's even stronger than Satan? Because he brings down Satan and he enchains him himself, right? So we're talking about a powerful one. And of course, we're going to learn about Jesus, the male child who's mentioned right here. So what we can do is read the first two verses and try to understand what is there, right? Somebody would like to read the first two verses, English or French? First of all, I'm asking you the question. Here, a great sign, the word is Shimeon. It describes a miracle. It describes a sign. How is Israel a miracle here? How is Israel called a miracle, right? Yes, we spoke about it on Saturday.
Yeah,
that's right. A miracle, because if you remember in Isaiah chapter 43, verse 11, you have God says that I create Israel. Create is bara, meaning out of nothing, right? Now, how did he create? We know that Israel comes from Shem and so on. What did he create? He created the envelope of salvation and redemption. Now, this is important because in the same way, he recreates in you a new body, right? So it's a creation, but out of nothing, you see the spirit in you recreates you, right? Then we call this sanctification. So you have salvation and sanctification, right? And did you know that it is in Isaiah chapter 8 where we are called, where we are told that we are actually signs and miracles? You can turn to that passage of Isaiah 8:18. Isaiah 8:18. Now, this is important, Isaiah 8:18, because Isaiah chapter 8 is cited many times in the New Testament as an example, okay, in Peter's, in Romans, and so on. And it's framed by two important prophecies, Isaiah chapter 7:14, the birth of the Messiah, and Isaiah 9:6, which is the nature of the Messiah. And here it speaks about us. In Isaiah 8:18, it says, "Behold, I and the children whom the Lord has given me," this is actually Isaiah speaking, "are for signs and wonder in Israel from the Lord of hosts who dwells on Mount Sinai." And did you know that in the book of Hebrews, this is cited, and it says that it's the Messiah who says that also. So how in the world are we miracles and signs in the world? Did you realize that you are a miracle? What is the miracle of your presence? Yeah, your salvation. This is the greatest miracle that could ever happen in the whole history of the universe. Okay, greater than the opening of the seas or anything like this. So this is why we're signs and wonders, and this is why we reflect the light and to the others, because we're the light of the world, right? The light of God, we reflect it, just like when Moses came down the mount after he spoke to God, they had to put a veil over him. Why? Because he shone too much. This is what a believer is supposed to do. Shine bread. So the word ot, by the way, for the, that's the Hebrew word for miracle. This is what is spoken of, let's say, the stars and the moon and the sun. They're all ots, that miracle, like they're beautiful. So we are, in a sense, telling us that we are beauties in this world. And it's important to look at ourselves like this. We are this testimony. We are made beautifully in the image of God, recreated and so on. So enough for us to be what? Always in a good mood. If you can. Okay. So now, who is the woman, by the way? Really? Well, they say that it's the church. Could it be the church?
Yes.
Hey, why? Are you going to have a problem now?
The bride.
Okay. It says that the child comes from the woman. Did Jesus come from the church? Or the church from Jesus?
Jesus, the church from Jesus.
That's right. So it's not the church. Well, it's okay. It's fine. Yeah, but could it be Mary? Miriam? Or not? She gave birth to Jesus. No. She cannot, because you have prophecies in there that doesn't suit her. There's no prophecies for the end times for Miriam or Mary. There's no 1260 days or 42 months about her. She's gone. It's not. So, it is Israel. But is it Israel? This is what John is going to tell us in the next verses. Poor guy. Okay. So, but see how she's described. A description that actually Joseph himself interprets for us in the book of Genesis chapter 37. Okay, this is how it works. The Bible interprets itself. You don't have to invent things. Okay, when we don't know, just leave it until you find out something. But this is kind of clear. So the woman was clothed with the sun, with the moon, that's verse 2. Under her feet, and on her was a garland of 12 stars. Okay, so one of these passages comes from the book of Genesis, of course, where you actually have the sun, the moon, and the 12 stars. This is Genesis 37. Okay, and he had a dream. Joseph had a dream. You can turn to 37:9. I'm going to read it for you, or just listen. Chapter 37, verse 9, and this is where the answer is. Again, when it comes to prophecies or any doctrines, the Bible interprets itself. If you're stuck, just leave it. You don't have to invent anything. This is when the problem comes. And so people think, I think this is it. What? Maybe yes, maybe not. So it says in verse 9, look, I have a dream, then I had a dream. At this time, the sun, the moon, 11 stars bow down to me. He's the 12th star, by the way. Okay, so this is Joseph. And so he interprets Revelation 12. So we find in his dream the same elements we have in Revelation 12. And it is Joseph himself who interprets the dreams and the woman for us with the 12 stars. So first, the brothers could not understand the dream. And at first, Jacob, who loved Joseph so much, got angry at him. Remember, he says, how can you tell them that they're going to bow down to you? But he says, this is the dream. I have to tell you the truth. But that's another problem. Okay. So it is that is Israel itself. And Revelation 12 suggests that Israel's suffering began after the departure of the Messiah, because Israel gave birth to a child. And once the child went up, this is when the actual anti-Semitism began. It began, in fact, the last 2,000 years, right? We know from the Catholic Church, Protestant Church, the world, and so on, how many times the Jews were kicked out of the different cities, left and right. But it would reach its paroxysm, of course, in the tribulation time. Now look at verse 5. Let's go back to Revelation 12. So we have a history, and the history goes fast until we get to the beginning of the tribulation. It says, and she gave birth to a son, And then we read, and her child was caught up to God, to his throne. That is actually the ascension, right? What did he have? He did not say surely, because he was rejected as Joseph was, right? And so this is why the actual tribulation began, right? But I want to bring you back now to verse 3 and 4. These verses present us with another sign in that came out. And this one is different. Look at verse 3 and 4. Somebody would like to read it? Yeah. Dragon, it's dracon in Greek. It's not like the dragon we think of, right? So this dragon happens to be the actual Antichrist himself. The devil, the Antichrist. But they will work together. He has 10 horns. Of course, the 10 horns, we have no time to get into it. But we know from Revelation, from Daniel chapter 7, Revelation chapter 13, he comes with 10 horns. There are going to be 10 nations that would follow him, right, in there. And so he stood before the woman, because his main objective, we're going to see, is to annihilate the woman, annihilate the Jews. This is why you feel an increase of anti-Semitism going on, right? And who is he? He is, of course, if you go back into Ezekiel chapter 28, Isaiah 14, this is what he says, I want to be like God. He wants to take over the world himself, just like we have read in Revelation 13. And this is where Jacob's trouble will start. That would be in the middle of this tribulation, right? Now, let's read again verses 5 and 6, because this is when we are right in the middle of tribulation, and it's going to be a great, that is, persecution in there. Especially verses 5 and 6. And read it. Yeah. Right after the woman gave birth to the Messiah, the text actually jumps over the whole time of the 2,000 years, the time of the church, and the text brings us right to the beginning of the second part of the tribulation, because it gives the number of days, 1,260 days, which is exactly 3.5 years. If you double this, it gives you 7 years, the 7 years of Daniel's prophecy. So this jump of time is like the prophecies of Daniel, right, as we have it. And what we learn is that as soon as Jesus ascended to heaven, the woman had to flee. But flee from whom? From the devil. At this point, she's going to have to flee. Remember Jesus in Matthew 24 when he says, he gives a point. He says, when you see the abomination of desolation. And in Luke 21, he says, when you see the nations surrounding Israel, get out of Judea. Go to the mountains. And we know from the book of Habakkuk, especially, that the wilderness will be where Edom is, probably Petra, because this is what Isaiah tells us. Now, I'm just throwing you all this information. It takes time to sit down and to read them, but these are passages that you have that are scattered in the Old Testament. This is why a prophecy is complicated sometimes to study, but it's worth it. And so the wilderness is, and remember, who went to Israel? Remember? Yes. So I don't know if you remember, right after Jerusalem, you have the mountains. You can walk there and start to hide, you know. And so I believe that the two witnesses will direct the believers there and go down to somewhere in Petra. God has prepared a place. This is what Habakkuk says, because then Jesus comes back. It says he comes there and then he comes up to Jerusalem in there. And so verse 13, yeah. Yes. No, no, she gave birth already of the Messiah. Because don't forget that the prophecies do not see the time of the church. It's as if we're back in the in there. Yeah. And if you go to verse 17, Satan reverted back, you know, let's say verse 13. Tells us why and from whom the woman is fleeing. It says, and when the dragon saw that he was thrown down to the earth, because what's going to happen is that the Satan and his hordes, which is, you know, a lot of demons, will come down to the earth, and he persecuted the woman who gave birth to the male child. That means he's going to be here. So we're talking about a very intense time of, you know, war and so on. And so, and the third verse in Revelation 12:17. Look at 17 right away. He says, here where the dragon is seen, even he's very angry. He says, so the dragon was enraged with the woman and went off to make war with the rest of her children to keep the commandments of God, that who keep the commandments of God and hold to the testimony of Jesus. So his main focus will not only be on Israel, but on all those who profess that Jesus is the Messiah. Okay. So this time is yet to come. This is the tribulation time in there. Okay, but again, why concentrate on Israel? I want to show you that verse that Jesus says. Okay, this is in Matthew 23:30. See what he says. You'll understand why even today there's a focus on Israel. Yeah. 23:30. Exactly. Yes, that's right. Here's the reason. He gives it himself. So what does it say? Vas-y, tu veux le lire, quelqu'un? Wait. No. 23:30. For I say to you, from now on, you will not see me until you say, blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord. Oh, 39, sorry. First, 23:39. Okay, because in chapter 23, you have the woes against the religious leaders. Because in fact, it is the religious leaders who denied Jesus. Okay, it is the people, of course, but the religious leaders, it was always the priests in the Old Testament and so on. But here, you know, he says, until you say that, you know, blessed be he who comes in the name of the Lord. This is from the Hallel, Psalm 118, then I will come back. So if they don't say that, he will not come back. Satan knows that, so he concentrates on the Jews. This is as simple as this, right? It's important that we understand that it is mainly the leaders of Israel who rejected. It's always been the leaders. Unfortunately, the people followed the leaders. Okay. One of the questions, if you remember, they asked me when I went to a synagogue, is how come the rabbis don't recognize that Jesus is the Messiah? And I said, it is according to the biblical history that all the prophets were, according to Jewish tradition, were killed by the religious authorities. So don't expect the religious authorities to recognize Jesus, right? He would be among the prophets who were killed, right? And I was happy to stay there, by the way, that he didn't kick me out. It was good. So that's number 10, right? The start, this is explains the actual, that is, anti-Semitism. You have other passages you can read for yourself. You know, what we're doing here is not an in-depth study, it's just going over the things. Now, let's start number 11. Now, number 11 is the war of Gog and Magog. All right. So this should happen in the middle of the tribulation. Now, the majority of the scholars, let's say, in Christianity, put it in the middle of the tribulation itself, because it is a war that reaches Armageddon. For the Jewish people, they don't know Armageddon. Gog and Magog is their Armageddon. Because at the end of the war of Gog and Magog, what do you have? You have actually the coming of the Messiah. And so they believe right now that the war of Gog and Magog somehow started. Because we're going to see that the three main countries that are mentioned there, which is Russia, Iran, and Turkey. And especially Iran, because the others we can debate. Iran you cannot debate, because it is clearly spoken of as Persia. Okay, Persia was, the name was changed to Iran not too long ago, in fact, right? And so when the rabbi saw that these three countries are together, so they said, this must be the war of Gog and Magog. The Messiah is coming very soon. In fact, Russia, we're going to see, I'm going to give you some facts, that is at the border of Israel today. It's a, they have a naval base, and they have, you know, their army is right there, right? And Turkey is not too far. And Iran, we know it's there. We know that there's practically every week, you know, there's war, there's planes, Israeli planes who are going to Syria to bomb the Iranians. Because they're the one who are feeding Hezbollah, they're the one who are feeding Hamas. It's a known fact. So these three are there, and the rabbis say, this is Gog and Magog. Okay, it's interesting that they say that. Few churches would say that. And yet, they don't go by the prophecies, but they've seen something very, very clear. Wait. Turkey. Yeah. Is that Gog and Magog reaches Armageddon? It's at the same place. We're going to see it ends at the same place, in the valleys of Armageddon. That's almost, yeah. It is said in another way, like the mountains of Israel. We know it's the Mount Carmel, all these mountains and so on. And we're going to see at the end that it speaks of the valley of Armageddon. So it will end there. Yeah. Now, first of all, what is? But it starts with one, just like World War I started and World War II finished. So they are, in a sense, within, let's say, 3.5 years, one would lead to the other. This is what I mean. But there are two different wars. That's right, Armageddon. Because at the end, it is the same thing. At the end, the Messiah comes back. So he comes back at the end of Armageddon. He has to come back at the end of Gog and Magog as well. So this is where they must reach together. Right? No. It's lengthened 3.5 years. It's a war that would last for 3.5 years. Because what's happening is the Russians go and come back and so on. Okay, but again, I just want to tell you, how do we know it's Russia? How do we know it's Turkey? Iran, okay. Because we have the Table of the Nations in Genesis chapter 10. Okay, and so all you have to do, in fact, this Table of the Nations is studied in universities because it is the most concise one, the most precise one about finding out where we come from. Most of you guys come from Japheth. I think all of you come from Japheth, except the Jews who come from Shem, right? So the idea is that if you follow, for example, Magog, and so on, you're going to follow and look at history where they went to establish themselves. And exactly when you follow with Russia, okay, Meshech, Tubal, Meshech, this is the origin of the word Moscow, Tubal, the origin of the word Tobolsk, right, the other capital of the of Russia, and you follow with Josephus especially, he tells you that they were there, they went to establish where Russia is today. And besides which, we have also the Targums, okay, that's the Bibles that were written before the time of Jesus, who tell you exactly who they think they are, like the Germany, Germania, Gomer, and so on. So all these things could be verified. Is it 100%? No. But it gives you a pretty good idea of where they are today. Now, when we say that Gomer is Germany, it could be one next to it, or Armenia, or anything like this. But we know it is in these vicinities, right? But we know for sure Iran. And we have to know Iran, as if the Lord told us Iran is Iran, because now they're the most overt anti-Semitic country you have in the world. You know that in Tehran they have a clock. Okay, and they say that they tell you when Israel's going to be destroyed exactly, and there's in a couple of few months or a couple of years, and they gave a date. So they're breeding anti-Semitism. Okay, just let's read Ezekiel 38, right? We have 5-10 minutes most. Somebody would like the first three verses.
The word of the Lord came to me, son of man, set your face against God. Land of Magog, the chief prince of Meshech, and Tubal, prophesy against him and say, this is what the sovereign Lord says, I am against you, O God, chief prince of Meshech and Tubal.
That's right. That's fine. Okay. By the way, I just want to tell you how Ezekiel is designed. Let's see, if you start from chapter 37 to chapter 48. Now, there's a sequence in there. Chapter 37 is the birth of Israel. Okay, this is with the dry bones, remember? The dry bones are all together, and at some point, which I find so interesting, is that Ezekiel says, hey, where's the spirit? There's no spirit. I see the body. But Israel has no Holy Spirit. They're not believers. Just like when Jesus says, when you see the fig tree giving leaves, you know I'm at the door, leaves but no fruits. It's only leaves. In fact, you couldn't find any fruits in there. That means Israel is there, but not in belief. They're there in unbelief, right? So Ezekiel 37, you have the coming back of Israel, where Ezekiel explains, really, that they come back from all the nations, not only from Babylon. That means that was what happened in 1948. Ezekiel 38, 39, you have the war of Gog and Magog. And Israel, and Ezekiel 40 to 48, you have the building of the temple of the millennium. The millennium, the messianic times. So you have the creation of Israel, the war of Gog and Magog, and the actual millennium temple. Right? The temple of Ezekiel is actually describing is huge. It has nothing to do with the one they had before or anything that would be built today. And this is why when you go to Israel and they want a third temple and you ask them, is it the temple of Ezekiel? They say, it cannot be. That this is much later on. They know that, right? Okay. So this is the thing. Now, if you read Ezekiel 38, there's something that is so interesting, is that God doesn't speak to any nation. He speaks to one individual, and that's Gog. Who is Gog? Okay. Gog himself, you know, I mean, it happens to be, I mean, by deduction, the devil himself, who leads everyone. He is at the head of all the wars, in fact, okay? And he brings them in, I mean, this is, so he doesn't talk to Russia, he doesn't talk to Turkey, well, he talks to the head of them all. So it's Gog, it says here, Gog of the land of Magog, the prince of Rosh. Rosh, by the way, according, you know, Josephus speaks of the Russian as Rusa. From the word Rosh. Rosh means the head, by the way. So maybe the name Russia comes from there. We cannot go, I mean, and affirm this. So you have Rosh, Meshech, Moscow, Tubal, and so on. And so he says, I'm against you, Gog. Let me go to the, because we don't have, I just got to give you a, let me go to the scriptures itself. I'm going to read it for you and to give you the name of the, hold on, Ezekiel 38. Okay. All right. And it says in verse 3, let's read it. I'm going to read it for you. And it says, thus says the Lord God, behold, I'm against you, O Gog, prince of Rosh, Meshech, and Tubal. I will turn you about and put hooks in your jaws, and I will bring you out, all your armies, horses and horsemen, and them splendidly attired. A great company with bucklers and shield, all of them wielding swords. Look at verse 5. Persia, we know it's Iran, because that's very precise. It's only a few years that they changed their name from Iran. Ethiopia and Put, right? That's Kush. Kush actually is it's Egypt and all the countries south and some in the north as well. This is where we don't know exactly, because Kush could be on top and at the bottom, and I believe it would be most of Muslim countries that would come. You have Put. Put is Libya. We can deduct easily that it would be the North African countries. Okay, the Arabs. But, you know what is common to all these countries except for Russia, and more part of Russia, in fact, is that they are Muslims. Okay, all Muslims themselves. And then you have, here you have Gomer, except for Gomer. But Gomer, according to the Talmud, this is Germany. Okay, it could be Germany, it could be Armenia, could be a country around there if they happen to be, that is Muslim. Bet Togarma is Turkey. right? From the remote parts of the north, and all the troops, many of them with you, be prepared and prepare yourself, you and your companies that are assembled about you, and be on guard. And look at verse 8. And after many days, you will be summoned in the latter days. Latter days, that means the end of times, right? You will come into the land that is restored from the sword. Okay, it's so 1948. The sword, as he explains also, was the ovens of Holocaust, you know. Because, you know, that what brought the Jewish people to come back, to go to their land, was actually the Holocaust. This is where Hitler, he actually wanted to annihilate all the Jews. He annihilated two-thirds of the Jews or so, right? 6 million, one-third of the Jews, sorry. Right, in there. So he wanted to stop it, but they weren't there. And then it says again, verse 8, I'll read it again. And after many days, you will be summoned in the latter days. You will come into the land that is restored from the sword, whose inhabitants have been gathered from many nations of the mountains of Israel, which had been a continual waste. And its people were brought up from all, from the nations. And they are living securely, all of them. So what's happening is that they come from all the nations. Let's not forget that Ezekiel was in Babylon. They don't only come back from Babylon, but he repeats twice, from all the nations of the world. And to close what it says, they live securely, that is in peace. Where do you get that peace from? From Daniel, who actually, when the Antichrist got to sign a peace treaty. Okay, the word peace actually is not like complete peace, like you have a shalom, it's a peace that is no war, okay? But there's going to be strifes and so on and so forth. And so as you go on, we can read this next time we get together. And so this is the war that the Jews themselves are very much aware of and believe that this is where we're heading right now. And this is what will bring the Messiah himself. Yeah. Yes, unfortunately, this is when we come in, is that they don't have the Word of God. This is why we give out the Bibles. And you can tell them, we should tell them about the Word of Gog and Magog and Ezekiel. They would be attracted. But they know, even the rabbis in the Talmud, they speak a lot about that war. And they know that this is the last war before the end. And this is where, you know, when they see Russia, Turkey, and so on, coming, going there. And also with this prophecy, it's good to study, and we'll do it eventually, Psalm 83. Because these are enemies of Israel from around the world. Psalm 83 are immediate enemies of Israel. And he names them. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. You know, you're talking about 10. There are 10 nations here, 10 nations in Psalm 83 that will come together. Okay? It's very possible that it is, I don't know, maybe the same. It's going to be eventually the same war. I mean, you know. So who are the enemies of Israel in Psalm 83? We have seen especially Gaza. Okay, Gaza, which is where the Philistines were. Okay, and again, what is the most interesting is that the shape of Gaza, it is the same shape as it was at the time of David. The same shape as it was at the time of Gideon and so on. Right? It never changed. And they were there. When the Jews came in, they were there before. Right, they were among the, there were 31 states there of Canaanites that were there when Joshua came in, and God says you have to get rid of all of them, you know, because God said it's my land, I will give it to whoever I want to give it, you know. Anyway, that's another thing. So that's a lot of information. It is, but it's good for you to know where we're going. At least prophecies will give you the directions of this world. Okay, and I wish that all of you will go to Israel, like Steve. He goes, what? How many times did you go to Israel? Seven times. Good for you. Yeah, and he goes, and at the proper time, you should bring it up. It depends on the conversation. If you speak about the end times, and you say, you know, we're close to Gog and Magog. Ask them, have you heard of Gog and Magog? They probably will say yes, but they don't know what it is. And tell them Ezekiel 38, it is there. You can bring them to read it. And remember, tell them it is Russia. Mention Russia, Iran, and Turkey. The end times, they're coming, yeah. We don't know when, but it's coming. It's in the formation. Might be another 2,000 years. I don't think so, but, you know. The day of the Lord, it's called Jacob's trouble. Okay, this is when, and they know, in fact, you can remind them that the Talmud speaks about it, that it said that the day before the Messiah come will be a terrible day. And they bring out all the passages of Amos, Hosea, and so on, a day where the world will hate Israel. They know that. You say, but we come to that day, Talmud. We're coming to that day. It's time to believe that Jesus is the Messiah, tell them. He's the only one who can save you. Tell them, your rabbis cannot save you. It's easy to say from here. Yeah. We're going to sing now. Yes. Merci à vous. On va chanter. And we can, who would like to close in a